And can you talk about the last years of Ajahn Chah's life when he was so sick and couldn't talk? Do you think he chose to stay alive in that condition for so long? It was about 9 or 10 years that he was bedridden, and he so had to be looked after by the monks and nuns, and that kind of direct nursing of him was one. They actually built a special kind of hospital kuti, or hospital dwelling place for him, and there'd be 4 monks and 1 novice during the day and 4 monks and 1 novice at night. And every 2 weeks there'd be an opportunity to change. And then the nuns would prepare special food for him, and they'd bring that to him. So he was looked after in the monastery, in the community. There was also, officially a patient of the Queen of Thailand, so that the hospital sent a vehicle out every day with a doctor or nurse, and then they would come and check on Ajahn Chah, so that he got tremendous care. And 10 years of being bedridden, he never had a bed sore, which is, for those who have looked after people, that is an incredible accomplishment. Also, the monks who were looking after him, there would be a monk who had more experience. There would be another experienced monk who was good enough, and then you could have 2 completely new monks. So that every 2 weeks, there'd be a change or an opportunity to change, so that monks would come from the branch monasteries. They'd wait for, like, as on the full moon and new moon, there'd be a decision of who would be changing, so that you'd go several days before the full moon or the new moon, and you'd wait, and then you'd put yourself forward to be able to help look after Ajahn Chah. And any things that they did to Ajahn Chah, they had to practice on themselves before they could do it to Ajahn Chah. So whether it was massage or he used a nasal feeding tube in his later years for just liquid food, and the monks had to practice on each other and become very skilled on each other before they'd be allowed to do it with Ajahn Chah. And there was this tremendous sort of care that was given to him. One of the Wat Pho Phong, as a even when Ajahn Chah first became ill, well, there would have been 100 branch monasteries already. So that very large community, very diverse, and to me it was a real kind of bodhisattva act on his part to be there, to provide the kind of core that held the community together, so that while he was still alive but not teaching or not giving guidance, then everybody had to figure out how to work together as a community, how to accept authority, how to take responsibility for leadership in that community. And what arose out of that has been a very coherent and well-trained and well-respected group of monasteries. There's probably over, nowadays there'd be way over 200 monastery is associated with Ajahn Chah. And without that, that period of Ajahn Chah, without him being there to give direct leadership, but him still being alive, was the catalyst for learning how to work together. And by the time he passed away, then it was, I was in very much in the center of it, so that, it's not, on the human realm, it wasn't bad. And there, it's a real group of diverse characters. And you think of the most monasteries, once the sort of the great master passes away, within a few years, it's usually empty, people have moved on to different places, haven't been able to get along with each other, or people just going off and doing their different, going their different ways, and it's quite ordinary, normal. But Wat Pa Pong has been able to maintain this continuity. There's also a wonderful gift just to have, say, monks, men, doing that degree of nursing and really looking after every physical need of the teacher. It's a really tremendous gift to all of the monks.